KLYT Broadcast Studio. This is ABQ Connect.
Welcome into ABQ Connect. I'm Jim Williams. I'm with you today, sitting in for Steve Ryman, and our good friend Paul Gessing is with us. Paul, we're a few days away from being at the midpoint of the New Mexico legislative session, and the Rio Grande Foundation and Heirs of Enchantment is putting out a ton of information for New Mexico citizens. You're the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Tell us about your mission and what you do, Paul. Why are you spending so much time trying to save our state?
Yeah, our mission is to bring common sense, limited government, and restore individual liberty to the state of New Mexico. And I don't have to tell you, Jim, that this state is not a hotbed of individual liberty. In fact, on index after index, when you look at the 50 states, New Mexico consistently comes in at the bottom of the good list, at the top of the bad ones. I'm here to tell you why, and your listeners why, and what we can do, whether it's in this legislative session or at the polls or whenever in our daily lives, in order to try to move that needle forward or at least make it better for people so that they can navigate this kind of challenging situation that we have here in the state of New Mexico.
So, Paul, you're set up as a foundation. People can make donations, and those are tax deductible for them?
That's correct. Yeah. Go to riograndefoundation.org or errorsofenchantment.com. Both sites are incredibly useful. You can donate at both sites online using a credit card. And of course, we accept checks and whatnot as well.
Errors of Enchantment is an interesting part of your organization. You're a think tank. You evaluate things. You do a lot of analysis. You have a team of people that work with you. And I know you do, you're probably reading all the time. In fact, I think I teased you when you told me I was talking with you on the phone. Why you took my call, I have no idea. But you're walking in Yellowstone National Park a few years ago. And as soon as you told me you're in Yellowstone walking with your family, I thought, uh-oh. Paul's wife is going to be on my case for calling him. But that's what you do. You are constantly thinking about these topics.
Yeah, and while that was a unique case, it is something where there's always issues in New Mexico that we're dealing with, and I try to be available. Doesn't mean I don't take a real vacation, because I do, but sometimes a fire, so to speak, comes and you got to deal with the situation. And so, we're always, especially right now, as the legislative session, as you said, is right about at its halfway point, we are trying to maneuver that situation into the best case possible. But we're also continuing our overall efforts to pull in and highlight important information that may not come up in this legislative session, because a lot of important issues, I believe, for New Mexicans don't actually get addressed in any given legislative session in any significant way. And that we want to put new issues and more important issues on the table that sometimes just get ignored in the legislature. And there's obvious reasons for why they get ignored.
So as we go through some of the things that are going on in the legislative session and things that you put in Errors of Enchantment, I want to coach our listeners a little bit. As we talk about this, go to errorsofenchantment.com. We're only going to be able to touch basically on, lightly, it's the tip of the iceberg, so to speak, what we're going to talk about today, because we only have an hour with Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation. But Paul covers and gives a pretty good bibliography in most of his articles about where he's getting information, and it's easy to verify it. I appreciate that you do that so well, Paul.
Yeah, well, part of the blogging culture, and we're certainly not the ones that got this rolling, but the beauty of being online and being able to put information there is that there's a link feature on these websites, and you can easily allow people to go and find the information for themselves. And every single thing that I talk about is footnoted in that little way. And, with all of the talk we've had and, Harvard and other major universities where people have been accused of plagiarism and making up information, I think it's very important that people don't just take what I have to tell you at face value, but do research for yourself, go to the post, look at the links and see what the information is that it's based on. And we always try to go with original sources, or at least New Mexico-based news sources, to highlight the issues that we're talking about.
Paul, we're going to talk about education for the rest of this segment. That's something that you've been key on. You have young children. They're involved in Catholic school.
They
and
are.
You're happy with some of the progress they're making, or all of the progress they're making. But you also refer to the National Report Card, or the NAEP. You look at stats from Mississippi about education. I know that you are constantly looking at where New Mexico fares in all of this. Let me ask you why you think New Mexico seems to be failing, because we're at the bottom of education when it comes to comparing us to other states, and I don't know a publication that would rate us higher. In the same breath, MLG seems to be taking credit for us having all these education reforms. So it's a mixed bag of information, but what are the facts?
Well, the facts are that the NAEP, or the Nation's Report Card, NAEP, as you say, it's better than Christmas for us at the Rio Grande Foundation, because Christmas comes around every year. The NAEP only comes out every 2 years. And unfortunately, the results aren't where we want them to be in New Mexico, but it again gives us a chance to highlight the real issues facing our state. So the NAEP is this test administered through the federal government. It is given to a statistically representative sample of students in fourth grade and eighth grade across the entire country, not just all 50 states, but two additional jurisdictions, Washington, D.C., District of Columbia, and DOD schools are factored in. And they go through, at least in the main NAEP test, reading and math at the fourth grade and eighth grade levels. So you basically have four categories of data available relating to these subject areas. You know, the reading, writing, arithmetic kind of stuff that we all learned or were supposed to learn as kids. Well, in all of those subject areas, for the second cycle running, the last one came out in October of 2022, New Mexico is dead last in all four of those categories. So that is not just frustrating, but tragic, because these are our children we're talking about. These are outcomes that affect every other area of New Mexicans' day-to-day lives, whether it's our crime problem, whether it's attracting medical providers to the state of New Mexico, and these doctors and highly trained, highly educated people looking at New Mexico and saying, well, I'm not going to send my kid to a failing school system in a state that's not getting the job done on education. And just the overall amount of economic, you know, success that we have as a state also is driven by these educational outcomes. Now, I could go into the numbers, but just suffice it to say that they're not good. Now, they don't really, you know, they're in the 200s. This is like the measuring stick. So it's not a percentage or whatever, but it is the way the test is given. And the fundamental challenge and problem is that New Mexico is dead last yet again. Now, I'm going to compare Mississippi and New Mexico. Now, if there's one of the four categories studied in the NAEP, the one that I would say is the most important, it's like rating your kids. Which is the most important, or your best kid? Well, the most important NAEP result is fourth grade reading, because the idea is if you're not able to read by fourth grade, you are unlikely to be staying around school when you can't read a science textbook or an essay or a word problem in math in seventh and eighth grade. That means you're likely to drop out. So fourth grade reading has been a special point of interest dating at least to the Susana Martinez administration. And unfortunately, the reforms that Susana Martinez tried to implement here in New Mexico got a lot of pushback from the legislature. Were not really adopted. They were reversed the moment Michelle Lujan Grisham took office. But other states, including Mississippi, which has many of the same socioeconomic challenges that we do, took up those standards. They were actually developed by Jeb Bush in Florida. He was the governor of Florida many years ago. And Mississippi is really showing how it's done. So in 2011, the NAEP test came out, the results came out. Mississippi and New Mexico were basically at the same level on this fourth grade reading issue, 209 to 208. Over the decade and a half till 2024, Mississippi has jumped 10 points with COVID and all the other stuff that's happened to 219. So 209 to 219. They've gone up. They're now kind of in the middle of the pack, broadly speaking, on reading. New Mexico, on the other hand, has gone down from 208 to 201. Now, we were at 208 in 2019, pre-COVID. And then, as we talked numerous times during 2020, 2021, the COVID lockdowns, keeping kids out of the classroom, trying to educate them around the dining room table, often without internet access and whatnot, really, really impacted New Mexico kids. And now we're at 201. So we've seen a substantial decline in our fourth grade reading scores. And that is going to impact everybody and everything for years to come in education. Now, the governor's talked about summer reading programs and pouring more money into education and pre-K and free college. But until you solve this problem, everything else is trivial.
And Paul, they have, since 2020, allocated more money into education. They're paying teachers a little bit more. They're building facilities. But New Mexico continues to lag behind, even though they've done that. I find it interesting you use Mississippi as the comparison, because not only were they at the same level we were years ago, and they're climbing now, but their socioeconomic makeup is similar to New Mexico.
Yeah, definitely a lot of poverty in that particular state. And that's something that you often hear as an unfortunate excuse for New Mexico policymakers. Oh, we can't change outcomes, our school system, our lack of family structure, all of these things. We simply can't get the job done in New Mexico. I'm sorry. That is not an excuse. Other states with similar problems are also moving the needle, are actually moving the needle in a positive direction. So I really don't give that as a reason for New Mexico's failure. Now, I want to talk about something relating to education. Now, first and foremost, other results with this NAEP score, this NAEP test, highlight that Catholic schools, and that's the biggest non-public network of schools in the country, so it makes sense that they looked at them. There's other fine schools across the country. I'm just noting this because it's part of the NAEP test now. They found that in general, across the country, Catholic schools had about 2-grade-level advantage over traditional public schools, and they actually looked at charter schools too. And there's some great charter schools, but the charter schools were really not testing at any significantly higher level than the traditional public schools. Results may vary, but I think it is a situation that highlights the value of not just Catholic education, but kind of that religious education and forcing people to have some skin in the game. That is the big difference that I advocate for. Providing something for free may sound great, but it doesn't create value. It doesn't make people value what is given to them.
That is an interesting perspective. We're with Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Their mission is to increase liberty and prosperity for all of New Mexico by informing citizens of the importance of individual freedom, limited government, and economic opportunity. You can get more detail about what Paul is talking about today and throughout the legislative session at errorsofenchantment.com. A lot of great articles. Just go there. You'll see the headlines and how they apply to all the different things that we're talking about today. When we come back, you've heard what Paul said factually about the data, not provided by Paul, but provided by outside sources that he's gathered together and informed for you. And so now we're going to talk about what the politicians in New Mexico, as you all know, as you're listening, you know that we have a governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham. You know that her constituents control both the House and the state Senate. And it's going to be interesting to talk about how they are reporting how education is doing in New Mexico. We'll be back with Paul Gessing right after these messages. Jim Williams with you, sitting in for Steve Ryman today. Appreciate you joining us on this Thursday. A little cooler than we've had early in the week. Paul, you had a fun time with your family, I guess, skiing up in northern Colorado or southern Colorado?
Southern Colorado, Durango, Purgatory. Also, great area to go skiing. And this past weekend, Super Bowl Sunday, has kind of become a family tradition for us. Talked about the Catholic schools, our particular Catholic schools allow our kids the day off after Super Bowl Sunday, which I think is an interesting and innovative approach. So that has given us an opportunity to schedule ski weekends for those time frames. And, you know, definitely need some moisture around our state. And that's an issue that hopefully will be resolved throughout this wintertime.
Paul, you sent out an email, I think, this morning. It's an education committee update for the 2025 legislative session. And in that, you point out what the House Education Committee is going to be talking about. I wanted to just review that real quickly. HJR 12, College Boards of Regents changes. Those are interesting. If you want to read about any of this stuff in detail, you can go to Errors of Enchantment.
Yeah, that one deals with scandals that have happened at Western New Mexico University specifically. Mm-hmm. That's put forth by the Attorney General of the state of New Mexico. So I know we can't go through of these, but that's one that we have written about and talked about a fairly significant amount at
And Paul, really, that comes down to just some accountability, right? I mean,
correct.
That's just run amok where you're spending public funds on things that you shouldn't be spending money on.
Exactly.
And I will say this I'm going to just go through this. HB 238, middle school and high school professional work hours. The legislature's going to get involved in determining the work hours?
That's what it sounds like. I'm not an expert on all of these bills. Okay. This is through our Opportunity for All Kids organization. It's specifically dealing with education. And we've got people helping us. A team of folks, including the head of that, is Rebecca Dow, a state legislator who right now is obviously doing her work in Santa Fe, but also we've got people helping put together just a running list of bills that are coming up in these committees.
And Paul, what's really neat is you allow people that go to your website to actually have the links to testify on these bills if they want to be part of the committee. Maybe we ought to take 3 minutes here before we talk about our political environment and how they're reporting about education. Maybe you should talk a little bit about how the legislature actually works. Bills come in, they go to committee, and most of us as citizens, we don't know that we can participate in that process.
Yeah, well, you certainly can. Email is one way to do that. Just send the representatives or the senators on a given committee an email. You should do this in the committee process because once a bill hits the floor, that is a much tougher thing to try to wrangle them on. But you can testify digitally, virtually. One of the few positive outgrowths of COVID-19 is that it allowed virtual testimony. So you don't necessarily have to hop in your car, drive an hour to Santa Fe, an hour back, and show up for a bill that may or may not even be heard. You can use the internet and sign up through a committee website to testify on a bill. And you can show up in Santa Fe, and I do that pretty regularly. Of course, this is kind of my job and something that we're specifically actively engaged with. But certainly, if you have something you care about that's being addressed in Santa Fe or not being addressed in Santa Fe, it's worth going up and just spending a day up there to try to influence some of these people.
This will be the last question I have about education because there's a lot more we have to cover. What are the political leaders in our state saying about the progress of New Mexico education even since 2020?
Well, the governor in particular, I want to engage with the governor's recent comments on that because she has been now, you know, really in office for close to 7 years. She is the most important single policymaker in the state of New Mexico. And there are inherent conflicts in New Mexico and other states between the state policymakers, so that being the legislators and the governor, and then school boards. And exactly how they kind of dance in terms of their policies and management of this governmentally created education system is pretty critical. So the governor, we typically, I'll just say it, we don't agree with her on much, but these are some very interesting comments, and some of which we do agree with by the governor. So this was all written up in the Albuquerque Journal. I'm actually using quotes from a recent Albuquerque Journal article relating to what the governor has to say. So first, the journal reports that Lujan Grisham expressed frustration about what she considered lack of transparency in how more than $4 billion in state funding is spent on education, of course, saying it's up to local school boards to decide how dollars that flow through the state's funding formula are put to use. Then she says, I don't have any power over the schools. In the same way, I can't tell judges what they should sentence nor can I tell a police officer who to arrest. That's simply an untrue, factually incorrect statement there. But then she goes on to claim that House and Senate Education Committee members are led by current or retired teachers, and they have effectively bottled up education initiatives in recent years. And she says, you've got a lot of former educators and superintendents who aren't interested in changing anything. And then she called it unethical and a huge conflict of interest for current and former educators to be voting on education funding and other initiatives as legislators. Now, the first part of that, I say, Governor, you are the most powerful single person in the state of New Mexico with regard to education policy. You're full of it. And she has not, in my opinion, put forth any serious reform. She talked about early in her term this moonshot, then COVID came along. She locked down our schools, locked kids out of schools. And that was the single most impactful education policy reform under Lujan Grisham. And it shows in the education results. She has not supported any school choice. She has not supported any significant reform of the education system. And to blame local school boards for the failures of our statewide education system is just hogwash. It's unbelievable, and I can't disagree with it enough. Then we get into the last couple of paragraphs about how you have members who are controlling education policy who are taking paychecks as either educators themselves or administrators. Most famously, of course, is the now deposed Cheryl Williams Stapleton, who worked right here for Albuquerque Public Schools and was skimming money. And I don't know if she's in jail or not now, but she's been really implicated in some serious and problematic, you know, kind of fraud relating to our school system. But I would agree with the governor that, yes, having these people in these positions of power is a problem, and it should not be allowed. And I don't think it really is allowed, because if you are collecting a check that you're funding yourself through the state coffers, it's a pretty significant conflict of interest. But it is one of those things that's kind of looked the other way. You know, the letter of the law versus actually enforcing the law are two different things, and this is one of those areas. So I guess in summary, I would love the governor. This is one of those things about being an elected official, is you don't have to talk in a specific and fact-based approach. She's never said, here are the things that these people have opposed, that I have put forth, that I've wanted, that I've used my bully pulpit. What are those reforms, Madam Governor? I can't point to anything. The one thing, and I put this in the show notes as the next point, the one thing that she has been rebuffed on and was rebuffed very recently on by a judge is the effort to force some of these rural school districts with long commute times to go 5 days a week instead of allowing them to achieve the same hours as mandated under the state law, but do it in 4 days. Now, there is no planet on which 5 day versus 4 day makes a huge difference. In fact, these rural districts are often the best performing school districts in the state of New Mexico. I mean, you have to have discipline to be out, you know, as a kid, presumably working in the fields and doing agricultural work. That is something that builds character and discipline. Those are kids that tend to perform very well in education results in general. So I'm just trying to figure it out. Here we are 7 years into the term of this governor. Our education results have been plummeting, and she's casting a lot of blame around, some of which I even agree with. So it's really nuanced and complicated stuff here, Jim.
Paul, you've been involved in leadership. You've observed political leaders. You've been involved in sports and all of those kind of things. This is not on our list, but I'm going to appeal to you as a Christian man and say, have you ever seen leaders in politics, leaders in the political process, basically make a statement, have it somehow disproven, maybe pass a policy, that policy fails, and a year later they go, you know what, I've learned what I told you, what I led us to do a year ago didn't work, and now I want to change it. I want to make it right. Have you ever seen that happen?
It is unfortunately all too rare for political leaders in this day and age, especially, to kind of admit their failure. It definitely is something that their political opponents in this tightly, divided country and the media will tend to jump on. And I get it. Why that is so hard. The problem, especially in New Mexico, that we've found is that when politicians do the wrong thing and do it consistently, not just for 7 years, but for more like 8 or 9 decades, as we've seen in New Mexico, especially in the legislature, the people and the media do not hold them accountable. Now, it really starts because you can't control the media. The media is going to do what we do, they do. And I understand that this radio station is technically media, but we're talking about the newspapers and the reporters and the folks on the TV and others. There needs to be more accountability in that realm. But until then, it really falls to the voters. And until the voters say, look, I know better than what this politician is trying to tell me. And, a great example, again, back to the COVID times, we can clearly see at this point that locking kids out of school and locking down our economy and the arrows on the floor and even the masks, it was all BS. There was no reason for it to be done, and it did not succeed in stopping the spread of COVID. Now, the governor at a point in time suddenly decided that a lot of those policies could be walked back. And now we've had courts weigh in and at the federal and state level and say, people who were fired need to have their jobs back, et cetera, et cetera. But no politician has said, mea culpa, I screwed up. I did things that were incorrect. Even though, you can make the argument, I didn't have full information. Fine. You should have full information before you start taking people's freedom away. And this is a state that lacks in freedom big time. And it's something that we never have politicians say, I screwed up, partially because the electorate doesn't hold them accountable when they do screw up.
Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, with us this afternoon on ABQ Connect. Hope you're having a great Thursday. RioGrandeFoundation.org, so G-R-A-N-D-E. RioGrandeFoundation.org, or go to errorsofenchantment.com for more detailed information about what we're talking here. Paul's going to be with us till the top of the hour. Paul, when we come back, I'm going to ask you to define freedom because doesn't mean we are allowed to do whatever we want. We'll be back with Paul Gessing. Stay with us.
This is ABQ Connect.
Paul Gessing, the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, fellow basketball player. I guess I shouldn't call myself a basketball player anymore, Paul. I can still play horse with the best of them, but the days of running the hardwood are over.
Well, thankfully, as I turn 50 years old later on this year, I am still able to run and don't have serious knee issues, but I'm going to find some wood right here and I'm going to knock on it because you never know. The next injury could be your last when it comes to basketball.
We're going to change the topics. We've been talking about education in our first two segments. The state legislature education committee is considering a number of different bills. I would say if you were going to summarize those bills, you probably wouldn't say many of those are going to do much to improve our current situation with fourth grade reading and eighth grade math scores. I'm going to ask people to go to heirsofenchantment.com to find out the details there. Talk to us a little bit about the paid family medical leave. That had more momentum than any bill, but you seem to indicate in Heirs of Enchantment that it's kind of slowed down a little bit.
It has indeed. That does not mean, as we sit here, that we can comfortably say that in March, at the end of the session, that this bill will not ultimately pass or some iteration thereof. But let's focus on what's at the table right now and where things stand. HB 11 is the bill we're talking about. This bill would increase taxes, if adopted, on workers and businesses as a means of funding a system of paid family leave. Now, in New Mexico, we're a deep blue state, and family is kind of an open-ended term here. Let's just say that the LGBTQ movement has certainly infiltrated deeply into New Mexico's legislature. So while you might think of paid family leave as your wife's about to have a baby, and so you go out on 12 weeks of leave, which is what you're entitled to under this bill, that is by no means the limit of this particular legislation. But yeah, it started out this session with, it looked like the Democrats who control things in both houses in Santa Fe were going to just ram these bills through. And HB 11 has been their priority, the progressives, for several years. It failed on the floor of the House by 2 votes after passing through the Senate, so it was on its final approach. It passed the House last year. It would have been the law of the land, I believe, because the governor, I think, would have signed it. But now we've had an election. We've had some evolution in the legislative bodies. And right now, this particular bill is bottled up in the House Commerce Committee for the time being. And we'll see when or if it has a hearing and maybe is amended and gets through that committee. Time is ticking, although we've essentially got, you know, a 30-day session fully sitting in front of us once we're halfway through this session. So if they can make it through last year, the 30-day session, and have it heard and voted on the floor in both houses, they can do it again this year. It's just a matter of whether they can come to an agreement and get some of these more recalcitrant members to go the progressive direction. You know, of course, Rio Grande Foundation is actively involved in educating them and educating New Mexicans and really pushing to try to oppose this particular legislation. Now, I should let you know, Jim, that we were recently written up in the Santa Fe New Mexican because Rio Grande Foundation has an activist component now. This is kind of an announcement. It's a new thing. So we're a think tank with the C3. That is a charitable operation, much like a lot of churches and whatnot. But C4 is a different tax designation that allows you to do more political activism. And what we did is we printed up a mock-up of 2 different postcards and sent it to a specific member of the legislature. And one was praising that individual for voting no and denying, you know, not having the tax increases of HB 11. The other was, kind of naughty, bad, we don't like what you did in supporting HB 11. And this group is called RGF Action. We have a website and everything. We were subsequently claimed to be bullying legislators and intimidating them simply by showing a menu of potential paths forward or not with regard to this particular legislation. So we're hoping to continue to use that 501c4 RGF Action wing to engage in more political ways. But it was a funny article, and it was from the Santa Fe New Mexican. You can Google my name or whatever you want to do, but that made some waves up in Santa Fe, and I like to think that it's part of the reason why we haven't seen agreements from these legislators. And by the way, for the article and for this venue, I will simply say we're not intimidating anybody. We're not trying to put them in a more difficult spot than they should be. We're simply trying to say, look, this is hugely impactful legislation for the state of New Mexico, and it's going to have some really profound negative repercussions. We're watching you. We're making sure that your constituents are watching you and vote accordingly. And that is stuff that the left does all the time, and we'll just see how it shakes out.
And Paul, I should emphasize that you really are nonpartisan in your approach, but you'd like the checkbook to be balanced, and you'd like our state not to frivolously collect tax or spend money like it's water. That doesn't seem unreasonable.
Yeah, and we think that if the legislature considers this a priority, we have billions in surplus revenue on an annual basis, and we have $58 billion in various permanent funds, sovereign wealth funds, ready to be used for this kind of priority. The way that the legislature has tended to operate is that they have a priority, or their left-wing base has a priority, and they immediately want to stick it on the backs of New Mexico's business community. And there are many reasons, this being one of them, why New Mexico has a small and relatively anemic business community. Our economy is very dependent on the oil and gas industry and the federal government. And until we change that mindset in Santa Fe where, oh, just stick it to the businesses, we're not going to succeed as a state economically. And there's multiple facets to this. We just spent 15 minutes talking about education. We got crime. We got all kinds of other issues. But the fundamental thing that needs to happen is New Mexico needs to be more business friendly, and putting another tax and a new regulation on them. And by the way, the fiscal impact report, the nonpartisan legislative analyst up in Santa Fe said that the bill, same as last year, this fund that they were trying to create to fund the 12 weeks of annual paid leave would be insolvent within 4 or 5 years. And what does that mean? Well, unlikely that this legislature would pull back on that benefit. It's more likely that they would just, oh, we're going to raise taxes on the businesses. We're going to raise taxes on the employees. That is not an option, but it's the way things seem to go.
Where's New Mexico relative to the amount of tax we pay compared to other states? Is that an unfair question?
No, it is a fair question, but it is, like so many things in politics, a nuanced question. So it depends on how you look at taxes, but at the state and local level, so not the federal government, because we're a poor state, so we pay lower federal taxes. We often show up on lists as being a low-tax state because we don't have high tax burdens at the federal level, because that's a progressive tax. You pay higher rate when you make more money. So at the state level, our taxes are about in the middle of the pack when it comes to relative to other states. Now, that is misleading, too, because we have this oil and gas industry, which continues to spin off billions and billions and billions of dollars in revenue. That is typically not considered in those interstate tax rankings. So New Mexico has a massive government by any measure. State, local, all government is really, really big here in New Mexico. But because much of the tab is picked up by the oil and gas industry, which doesn't kind of register in those indexes, we're not seen as one of the very highest tax states in the country. So on one hand, thank God for oil and gas. On the other, it would be nice if the politicians didn't just suck in all that oil and gas revenue and sit on it in government, if they returned it to us in the form of tax reductions or rebates or some variation thereof, New Mexicans would not be among the poorest people in the entire country.
Does the current administration, Michelle Lujan Grisham's administration, and the state legislators that are part of her political organization, is it true that they are trying to get rid of oil and gas? Here's why
I'm
asking.
That is a tough question.
There's a paradoxical perception that I have, and that is it seems like they want to get rid of oil and gas, and they want to conform with rhetoric coming out of what I would call the Biden administration. But at the same time, they want to take credit for the windfall of revenue that's the state's generating through oil and gas. That seems ironic to me.
So the answer is, again, it's complicated. There is no question that Michelle Lujan Grisham and many of the liberal legislators, Democrat, progressives, et cetera, are not fans of the oil and gas industry. And they constantly introduce legislation that imposes new regulations on the industry. A couple of them going on this session. One involves creating a mile-wide buffer zone around any oil and gas activity vis-a-vis things that benefit children. So it could be a school, but I'm a golfer in addition to a skier, and you go up to Pinyon Hills Golf Course in Farmington, the golf course has oil and gas pump jacks located throughout the golf course. Well, that could easily be labeled an educational institution because, of course, they give golf lessons to kids. They have camps for kids. They have all those kinds of things where kids are out on that golf course. In fact, they're going to play the state golf championship this year at Pinyon Hills Golf Course. So there's all kinds of nuances and problems. But the summary is that the politicians, as progressive as they may be, really like the money. And it is a lot of money. They don't care for the industry, and they are more than happy to introduce and often vote in support of policies that, while it wouldn't outright kill the industry, it would hamstring the industry. And that's just one of them. Royalty payment increases, those are basically taxes on the oil and gas that's brought out of the ground, and many, many other policies. Net zero, SB4 this session, would place New Mexico on a trajectory to completely eliminate CO2 emissions by 2050. Now, will that happen? I don't think so, but these are the kinds of things that we often see in Santa Fe.
Unbelievable. Paul is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Their mission is to increase liberty and prosperity for all New Mexicans by informing citizens of the importance of individual freedom, limited government, and economic opportunity. Details about each one of the topics Paul is addressing today can be found at errorsofenchantment.com. When we come back for our last segment, we'll have a shorter segment in the final segment with Paul. We can never get through all of this, Paul, because there's just too much to talk about. But we'll be back with Paul Gessing right after these messages. Jim Williams with you on Thursday afternoon with Paul Gessing. Thank you for joining us. Paul's the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, there's so much to talk about to make New Mexico better. You've stayed in New Mexico for a reason. I always ask people, why are you staying here? Because it seems like the obstacles we have to getting back to where we'd like to be are enormous.
Yeah, it's a challenge, the state is, for sure. Probably the single greatest challenge as a state in the entire country. We have more potential to move our state in a positive direction. I always talk about California and compare and contrast New Mexico and California. Now, I probably would be even more frustrated in California because California, for 100 years in this country, was the place to be when it came to the future. So much of our culture, so many companies and industries came from California. Obviously, the computing industry really all got its start in California. So California is a state that has a lot of prosperity, but they have ideologically chosen a path that will, over time, chase people and resources out of that particular state. It's still a beautiful state. I've visited there many times. New Mexico, equally beautiful, different from California, never was the place to be. We've been a state for over 100 years. And yes, people came here over the years, but I always say that we got our start on December 7th, 1941, with the Pearl Harbor attack, because that put New Mexico and the military-industrial complex to work in New Mexico and really kind of started bringing people here. And this state boomed for several decades after that. The federally fueled New Mexico economy with a side of oil and gas put this state on the map. Now, we should be a state that, like Arizona, like Colorado, like Texas, like Utah, is a destination. People want to be in the Southwest. They see the beauty and the blue skies and the lack of humidity and all of the positive things about the American Southwest. And heck, we've got way better weather than Texas. We've got way better scenery than Texas. And yet Texas is one of the fastest growing states in the entire country. It's not because people like Houston in August. It's because They have good policies that are attractive to businesses and attractive to average people. And New Mexico, we can choose a lot of different paths. Everybody around us, including Blue Colorado, has superior policies that lead to better outcomes. Maybe not universally, but certainly as a general rule. Texas in particular is, you know, kind of noteworthy because it's such a big state population-wise. It has no income tax. It's got low taxes. And it's a state where people continue to flock to and flock to year after year after year. So, yeah, we would love to be a zero income tax state like Texas. A bill is being introduced, HB 275, this legislative session. It's a Republican bill, so chances are not good for its ultimate adoption by the legislature or the governor. But we need to push for these big, bold ideas because New Mexico should be among the fastest growing, most prosperous states in the country, and we're just falling down constantly.
If you're listening today, I hope you'll go to errorsofenchantment.com. Details about all of this information, bills that are being considered, reviews of what the legislation has proposed thus far. We're about halfway through the 60-day session. Paul is staying in touch and his team. Paul, you mentioned that you now have a lobbying entity, really, mm-hmm. and you've done that and done all the proper paperwork and everything. Your RioGrandeFoundation.org is actually set up as a charitable foundation, and contributions to you guys and all the good work you're doing. And you're not publicly supported. Is that true?
No, we don't take any money from the government. Mm-hmm. We are strictly, you know, supported by the people of New Mexico and organizations that want to see this kind of activity undertaken across our state.
I don't want you to go into depth about these two topics, but I know in Errors of Enchantment, you talk about public safety bills, law enforcement, so people can get more information about that. I know you also talk about medical malpractice and the fact that we're losing doctors in our state.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the law enforcement, of course, that is one area where the governor has kind of tried to seemingly move the needle forward. I'm not at liberty. I don't have the names of the bills or the numbers of the bills or anything. Fundamentally, while I think the governor has tried in some respects to move in a better direction policy-wise, a lot of our crime problems are quite frankly not in Santa Fe. They're created here by the people we elect to mayor and to an extent city council. Of course, the Department of Justice, which was brought in and has put a finger on the scale when it comes to how law enforcement has to do its job. So they can pass laws in Santa Fe, and there might be opportunities to do that to improve safety in New Mexico. But I'm not convinced, and of course the judges. And of course we tried to educate people on the judges in the last election. Unfortunately, they were all retained. So I do think it's important for folks before they go to the polls to really understand who the real players are. And yes, improvements can be made in the legislature by passing tough on crime bills, but we have an election later this year for, I want to say, four city councilors plus the mayor. That is, here in Albuquerque, that has to be the focus.
I love it. Errorsofenchantment.com is where you can go for additional information. Now, Paul, this probably is not the most important topic, but it's actually one of the most intriguing.
Well, let me just mention real quick, you mentioned medical malpractice.
Yes.
That I do have a bill for, SB 176, and that is a bill that would revamp the medical malpractice rules in the state of New Mexico. It is currently... It's sponsored by Martin Hickey. He's a Democrat senator here in Albuquerque, an MD, and Pat Woods, who is a Republican from the eastern part of our state. Definitely addressing the medical malpractice issue is one of many things that needs to happen in Santa Fe to bring in more medical providers. Of course, this bill is going to directly attack, if you will, a prime Democrat Party constituency. The Democratic Party gets a lot of support financially from the trial attorneys, and I just have my doubts that anybody in Santa Fe is going to be willing to really take that group on, given the makeup of our legislature.
Yeah, they're primarily all attorneys.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, this is going to be a silly question, but it's my last question of our time together today. We've got about 2 minutes left. Most of New Mexico is aware of the name, image, likeness, and the fact that college athletes are currently being paid. One of my favorite athletes is Donovan Dent, the point guard for the University of New Mexico. I think he's phenomenal. I think it's going to be very difficult for New Mexico to hold on to him. And he may – I'm not saying where he's going to go or what he's going to do. I think it's amazing that he stayed here. But there's a bill now in the legislature trying to get tax dollars to help pay athletes is the way I'm interpreting it. Is that clear?
That is very much the case. Now, we don't have time to go through all of this, but let's just say that when Jim Williams was playing for the Lobos, you were not picking up a paycheck from the university or anybody related to that. And that was actually part of a scandal, I think, that impacted UNM athletics at the time. But things have changed dramatically. And I think in many ways it is a good thing, although we're really not here to talk about that system. But the fact that student athletes can now be paid has created a little bit of a Wild West scenario in college athletics, to the point where for your name, image, and likeness as a college athlete, you can, and it's pretty much expected nowadays, that you do get paid. I have read articles saying that Ohio State's national championship winning football team overall was paid about $20 million. Senator Mo Maestas has introduced a bill, SB 268, which would allocate $2.5 million to each of New Mexico's Division I universities. So UNM and NMSU, their athletic programs, would get $2.5 million apiece if this bill passes. Now, I disagree with this bill. I'm not against paying athletes. I do think there needs to be some regulations internally with the NCAA and other governing bodies to figure out a system moving forward. But first and foremost, $2.5 million is a drop in the bucket. That's not going to really make UNM, you know, just because you have this money doesn't mean that these universities are going to be much more competitive, especially at the football level. Basketball, Lobo's doing fine. Aggies had been doing.
But, Paul, we've already lost really good players because New Mexico doesn't have the backing from its sports fans as you would have even at Texas Tech. We lost J.J. Toppin. I'm told that he's making in excess of $200,000 or $300,000.
And I would say that fan wise, we're doing fine. You know,
oh, we UNM, have a lot of fans.
UNM does very, very well on attendance, but where we face challenges is two things. One is there's always going to be the media market effect. You're always going to have these athletes wanting to be exposed in bigger and bigger media markets. And secondly, other universities in other states with more well-developed economies are going to have more money to throw around. You're going to have more businesses located in that state that are going to be willing to put up money to fund these athletes' salaries. And Texas is a prime example, as we've talked about. You have dozens of Fortune 500 companies headquartered in Texas. They can all put up money in the pot for those kinds of benefits. And that is my constant refrain, is that we don't need to take the oil and gas money that should otherwise belong to us and dump it into paying college athletes. Because if you start at $5 million annually or $2.5 million per school, it's not going to be long before it's $10 million or $20 million or $30 million. You know that's the way these things kind of work. And I would say, look, if you want New Mexico to be able to compete in a college sports atmosphere that is much, much different, changing very dramatically, we need to focus on broader economic development, building out our private sector, and bringing businesses in here that will ultimately pay for those kinds of things. But really, the goal should be just developing our economy, raising people out of poverty, and improving broader economic conditions for the state of New Mexico. So, taking money from the state coffers and using it to fund college athlete salaries, not a good idea. SB 268, that's one that we definitely are opposing.
Paul, I so much appreciate how you've tied this all together. And you've really made even NIL dependent upon the prosperity of our state and the freedom and liberty we all experience. And I hope that you continue to do your work because you do amazing things. Go to errorsofenchantment.com if you want to find out more detail. And, of course, riograndefoundation.org is Paul's primary organization. Thanks, Paul, for joining us.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate the time.